is the tip of the iceberg. Seeing someone like Trump take power and bring all of this to the fore, I think if we don't reckon with history, we're in deep, deep trouble as a country, no matter what happens during these elections.
You talked about Black Lives Matter, the movements of immigration rights. I wanted to end with the Catholic workers, the Catholic peace activists in Georgia. Catholic peace activist Patrick O'Neill sentenced to 14 months in jail Friday for breaking into the Kings Bay Naval Submarine Base in Georgia to protest nuclear weapons policy. He's part of the Kings Bay Plowshare 7 group of Catholic peace activists who entered the base on the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. Can you talk about the significance of this in the last 20 seconds we have?
I've said for a long time, the greatest danger that the world has faced from Donald Trump is the possible threat of a first strike nuclear weapon that happens as a result of some tweet that Trump doesn't like from a foreign leader. These Catholic peace activists during the Trump administration tried to confront that nuclear threat, and there was a total media blackout on the action that they did. And, you know, if we lived in a just society, the Kings Bay Plowshares activist trial would have been reported on as one of the most brave confrontations of the most dangerous aspect of this government and particularly this administration.
We have to leave it there. Jeremy Scahill, co-founder of The Intercept, will link to your American Mythology series podcast, Intercepted. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
All right, well, this is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. on Monday. We know what that means. It's time for more talk radio with your hosts, Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey. Stay tuned to your community connection.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So how are you doing this morning?
You know, whenever I have a little bit of Aretha, it makes everything feel so much better.
You know, I was thinking the same thing. Even though it was a short few second hit of Aretha, you know, it kind of evens everything out. I can do that. I can make this Monday happen now.
We can. And you are listening to More Talk Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and this is KBOO, your community radio station, and I am Cecil.
I am yawning.
You're yawning.
I got it out. Okay, now I'm Celeste.
excellent.
Oh, God. That's embarrassing in a way. You know, you're waiting patiently, and then all of a sudden this yawn sneaks up and says, Gotcha.
Well, you know what else? I got my ballot late last week. And as we just heard from Amy Goodman, part of the questions we have is, what is next? You know, I've seen a lot of people who have filled out their ballot and turned them in as soon as they got them, and I saw a news report in yesterday, and I think something like with 10% of those who have voted have already voted, so people are filling in their ballots and sending them in quite quickly.
Well, I got to get mine and go turn it in, and like the rest of the country, hold my breath until, you know, all the ballots are counted and validated or verified or whatever the process will be. And then see what happens on, well, not just November 4th, you know, or maybe November 11th or what have you, but more importantly, what's going to happen in January. Is it January 16th? Is it fixed date like the election, or is it a floating date like Thanksgiving?
What date are you speaking of?
The inauguration.
Usually, I think it's the 20th. I think
I want to say the 21st, the first, and then for some reason the 16th popped up because COVID. I'm gonna blame it on COVID.
Right, and there's also, you know, the Electoral College meets in December, so that will be when the winner of the election is determined technically.
Yeah, it's official. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I said part of the challenge is trying to discover what will happen this election. I think part of the reason we see people standing in lines in some states for 8-10 hours, and so many people who have ballots to send in, they're doing those so quickly, is that there's been such concerned about the election, the fairness of the election. Will ballots be counted? Whose ballot will be counted? Will people be able to vote? That there's a lot of anxiety about this election, more so than in other elections in recent years. So I don't know what will happen. I just saw an online petition that emailed me today about what will we do to make sure that the election is fair, or if democracy is attacked between now and January, will we stand up for democracy? So a lot of questions.
Well, you know, part of the issue is from whom are those questions coming? If they're coming from our seated administration, the incumbent, that means something different than if you are not a Trump supporter. You know, if you are a Biden supporter, or you're voting for Biden for whatever way you want to define it, you know, those are two different dynamics about supporting the election. But I'm more concerned, I guess. I'm not more concerned. I'm trying to figure out how do I qualify this. I'm concerned. I'll say it this way. I am concerned about what happens the day after with regard to the fact that we will have to either rebuild or withstand. We'll either have to rebuild or withstand some stuff. I'm trying to find the proper phrase to use to describe it, but basically, you know, things are not necessarily going to be as cut and dried and definite, having definite borders, you know, edges, time, as we would want. It's not like if Biden is elected, everything is just suddenly going to be beautiful and peaceful and sunny and rosy. And I'm speaking mostly with regard to the fact that the social and cultural atmosphere we're experiencing right now is not positive. I mean, just recently we saw on the news a challenge that a Black Portlander had with just trying to buy gasoline at Jay's gas station, which is, you know, scant block away from cable.
Right.
And that, when I saw that, both in the news and on YouTube. I was both kind of saddened and it clarified something for me. It clarified an experience I had had with the place and had me thinking about, okay, what just happened here when I went in to buy gasoline, because it was a weird experience. It was a weird encounter. It wasn't necessarily overt, but it was still, it was just not a pleasant encounter. You know, it left me thinking, okay, did I just experience some kind of micro something, aggression or insult or something, or am I tripping or what? And I remember, you know, to this day, I have a not good feeling about the gas station. And when I saw that, it kind of came back, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, maybe that's what it was I was experiencing. Because, you know, being a person of color, black specifically, but a person of color, when you have these little things happen, sometimes it's just on the outside of your full consciousness. You know something is not right. You know something's awry, but you don't want to just it's either you don't want to or you can't quite address it as full blown. I've been discriminated against, because you know you wanna hope that it's just not that every time. Let's just say
And you just want to get through your day and, you know, get your gas and carry on with other things. So,
And so, you know, I've been feeling that in the pit of my stomach ever since. And I kept telling myself, well, whatever happened, you know, less is gone. So don't dwell on it, you know. And I try to look at things that way, but that's all I get. What was that song, Things That Make You Go, Hmm?
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, go ahead.
No, you know, that's something we can explore, these incidents of microaggressions, racism, things that make you go, but also I want us to talk about, as you mentioned just briefly, what happens next after the election? Where do we go if Biden is elected? What do we do? Or if Trump maintains power, how do we respond? What are the next steps? And it'll be interesting to hear listeners' responses to what will they do the day after the election or the day after the inauguration? What are the tasks that we have to do? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And we are seeking your wisdom, your thoughts about what happens next. And we might expand that more beyond the national election, but in terms of the local scenes as well. What happens after the elections? If your candidate or platform or positions win, or if they lose, where do we go here? And will the cry for democracy take a different step depending on who is or who is not elected?
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. And the phone number is 503-231-8187. And operators are standing by now.
No, just one.
Just one operator.
Well, you didn't have to clarify. We knew that, but it was just such a turn of phrase. You know, I make up my phrases. Like, it was a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about whatever the steroid and medicine concoction that Trump has taken, and I came up with something, and I got teased by my friends because they asked me how in the world and why in the world did I come up with hydrochloro concoctin polymorph pumpkin juice, And I said, because it sounds like that's probably what Trump was taking, because he was on a steroid rush. I don't want to say steroid rage, but, you know, steroid rush. He's making less and less sense. And I, for one, am not necessarily, I don't care to try to make fun of him or anything like that because of it. Because on one hand, even though he has represented himself as being not a compassionate character, you know, I'm not going to get out of my character and call him names and drop down to his level. But I am curious as to how other folks, with regard to today's topic, are going to, we're going to work on getting his taint off of our day-to-day culture and interactions with each other, because I find our current state is just abysmal. It's saddening to think that we don't know how to talk to each other anymore. We have no desire to talk to each other like we are human beings in this, you know, shared experience. And I've seen everything from newscasts to things happening, you know, that I'm witnessing, or secondhand stories from friends and acquaintances about how they're being treated by, you know, service providers at hospitals, police, everything. And it's as though, okay, let me have, I'm going to indulge in a moment of hyperbole. It's as though the gates of hell have opened and this new spawn of demon comes out and just, you know, basically assaults you and calls you all kinds of names and denies you humanity, you know, since Trump has been president. And I'm just thinking to myself, okay, how do we rebuild this? How do we turn this around? What's the next steps? And so it's not just in terms of the political, you know, how do we deal with taxes or environmental protections or, you know, social safety net rebuilding. It's that very important interpersonal communication dynamic that we really need to change and get back to something helpful. And so all of those things, you know, like, how are we going to make the change, people? How are we going to do it? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. And, you know, I'm sure some people are thinking, well, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to get some local people elected. And we're going to, you know, we're going to do more of the get out and pick up the trash, like the declutter or detrash people did. Or, you know, we're going to push forward transparency changes in policing or what have you. And those are all good. No, but that's not going to be all. We have to do a whole lot more. I still got to get my computer to turn on so I can see you. There we go.
Well, I thought you just did not want to see me, but that's okay.
No, I would love to see people in person soon. I'm of that age, and my nursing background is like, no, I'm not taking chances on getting out too much, you know. And even though I have been from time to time seeing a couple of people who I know don't have COVID, like my brother and a few other folks, I feel even weird coming to them, because when I go to the grocery store, you know, or have an errand to run, I keep thinking, who am I being exposed to? And last week I was up in my little storage unit, and I moved some things, and dust came up, and of course it got right all up in everything, and I'm coughing, and all for the next few days I'm freaking out thinking, okay, do I need to get a COVID test? Because this is a bad cough. People hear me coughing on the phone. Hey, what's wrong with you? You know, can I get COVID through the phone wires? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know, but since you asked such a smart-ass question, I'm going to cough extra hard in the phone, you know. Yeah, I'm bad sometimes. What can I say?
Right. So let's hear from some people's reflections about these topics that we raised. Maybe you want to talk specifically about local elections and the results of the elections that might in your community. What are things that you're looking forward to? But more generally, what do we do the day after the election? So much energy and money has been focused on electoral politics these last few weeks. And as all of us know, the work for change does not begin or end with election, although those are very important, and we should not minimize the cost the price that people have paid to ensure people have the right to vote, and also the barriers that continues to be placed to prevent people from voting. Having said all of that, though, what do we do beyond elections and beyond the voting booth? What things we need to do to either mobilize, energize, transform our community? There are many issues, national and local and statewide, that will impact all of us. What are some of those issues that you have been working on in your community? What are things you are focusing on, and what areas, how do you think people should respond or act the day after the elections, November 4th, after the inauguration of your new commissioner or counselor or mayor or governor or president? Where do we go from here? And are you hopeful or are you nervous? What do you think will happen? Election seasons always make me feel somewhat ambiguous and somewhat nervous. And I think it began as a child, watching the election returns and trying to hope that my candidate will win, and having the sense of euphoria if the candidate I wanted to win won, or sense of deflation if my candidate had lost. I'm wondering how people respond to elections, and where did they see us going in the days and weeks ahead? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and give us a call and share your thoughts about the elections and where do we go after the elections. Do you think the elections will be what do you think about the elections coming up?
I think they're going to happen. Yeah. I don't even know what else to say. I don't know what else to say, but, do give us a call. You don't want to hear us talk all the time about what's going on, or maybe you do. I mean, it is called talk radio. Maybe you can just listen to Cecil and I. If you are, yeah. Yes, but, we want to talk to you, too. 503-231-8187. Some interesting things I've seen in the news with regard to kind of tangents on this whole what do we do next. One of the Facebook vloggers that I check into from time to time is Bo of the Fifth Column, and I think I've mentioned him before. And one of the things that he had mentioned was that it's really interesting that our extreme ends, our polar ends of the political spectrum, whether it be the conservative right, the militia the militarized conservative right or the left / anti-fascist elements, more militant elements of the extreme left seem to both be invested in some weird way in keeping Trump president. And that's because they both want to see the United States rebuilt, torn down, rebuilt, or as the phrase goes, burnt down to the ground, you know, and rebuilt, restructured. And he kind of characterizes their motivations this way. For the right is to keep their guy in office because that will help roll back any rights that the undesirable people may have and to maintain a status quo for white supremacy. And if for the left, it will be the opportunity to tear down this unviable system that we have right now is most likely and most favorable under Trump because no one will like him. And so then we can have the societal and cultural spasms needed to bring about revolution. And I thought, well, that's an interesting point of view because it seems to be bearing itself out, especially when you look at how hard the white supremacist organizations are pushing to get this race war they've been trying to get, well, at least since the 60s, maybe 70s. Well, when did David Duke really hit prominence?
It was late 70s.
Yeah, late 60s and 70s. And so, yeah, you know, that's one faction that would like to see Trump stay in power, because that will help them bring about this race war and into, you know, all of us folks of color, you know, being such political upstarts and wanting our own rights, you know. But I was really tickled to hear him say, and then the left-leaning population wants their revolution too, so that they can tear down and build something more equitable.
Well, that's something. Oh, we had Timothy on the line, and he hung up while you were speaking. So, Timothy, if you can call, we'll make sure that we'll call on you as soon as you return your call. You know, one of the things I'm cautious against is this tendency by some to balance what's happening on the so-called right with what's happening on the so-called left. And I don't think that there's, I don't think we can say the far right and the far left. I mean, even the FBI says that the greatest threat to of domestic terrorism is on the far right. And as the governor of a Midwestern state, who was threatened with kidnapping and I'll say lynching by right-wing extremists, and even though the president even continued to pander to the right, even after the federal government captured those who were threatening the governor, he continued to urge them, and you saw at the rally he had saying, you know, lock them up, encouraging that sort of That's a challenge we face. But let us go to Iris, who's on the line right now with their wisdom. Good morning, Iris.
Good morning.
Good morning. I appreciate what you had to say about Bo of the Fifth Column. He's got a lot of good observations. You know, tearing down the system, like both the far right and the far left want to do, is it's like herd immunity. You know, herd immunity has never happened without a vaccine, and it will involve millions of deaths, millions and millions of deaths, and far more uncomfortable situations than what we've got now or what we need to do right now just to slow down COVID. Tearing down everything is just going to mean mass distraction, mass death, more epidemics, none of the systems working that we just depend on for regular life. It's not really something that's going to help a lot of the people who exist today. We really need to address the fear that everybody is, well, that everybody, but so many people are operating on now. When you have to fear going to somebody's gas station because he might come out and just be nasty to you, or, you know, you feel that edge and go, hey, how far is he going to take this? And then there's all these people on the right coming from so much fear. We got to figure out how do we address that? How do we say, hey, are you really scared of something that's really happening right now, or have you made it up? I was shocked a few years ago to hear my brother say something about how he was under threat, and I forget the exact thing, but I think it was like he was worried about terrorism, and he said, yeah, we're really under threat. And I was like, hey, nobody's throwing bombs at you. It's not Syria. It's not Iraq. Nobody is actually shooting at you. Why are you so worried about this? Get on with your life. Get on with doing something constructive.
So, was he able to articulate what he was afraid of when he says he's under attack? I mean, there are some threats, cultural threats or social or economic threats, that people sometimes give so much credence to that they begin to see themselves as the intended victim of that either change or that threat. And so I'm wondering what he said was the actual threat. Could he articulate it?
Well, it's, you're right. I mean, some people really take something so close to heart when they're not really under attack themselves. They feel it, but it's not like it's affecting them now. I was talking about, I guess with him, I was talking about our primary needs being clean air, clean water, food that's safe to eat. And he was saying, oh, no, our primary need right now is protection against this, I forget if it was a foreign threat he was worried about at that moment, but like, sure. No, you live in San Jose, California. You are not being bombed by anybody. What your daily needs are right now are what are truly important. And if your water's being poisoned by, you know, fracking, or your air has become unbreathable and making you sick, that's a more primary need right now. And just, there's so many people who are survivalists or on the edge of that, who are like worried about they're going to get attacked by some black gang or something. And like, really? Really? You can't, that scared of that?
Right. I think it's so important that you remain in dialogue, you know, with your brother. So often, I think part of the challenge we face is that we, all of us, don't have that type of communication with those who opinions are so different than our own, and we just maintain communication within our own silos. So as long as you can keep open that line of communication with your brother, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, he's not off on that fringe, but
okay.
You know, there's so many people I don't have any contact with that opening that contact and being able to getting into that dialogue with somebody that just shocks me is what's difficult.
Yeah.
With my brother, yeah, that was a momentary, and I could really talk with him about it, but he's not on that fringe that's like hard to get into the dialogue with about why are you so scared? There's a lot of people that it's hard to open that conversation with, and making the openings that we can all enter into those conversations with, that's the first hard step, is finding where to have that conversation that we can stand to get into, and that we can get the person who's so far away from our own point of view can stand to get into.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Iris, and hope
you
vote wisely. Have you voted yet?
Oh, I'm in the midst of deciding some things, like who do I want for mayor? But, you know, remember in 1980, it took less than 28% of the people who could have voted to put Ronald Reagan into office. And we already knew, of course, that there was a climate crisis coming. He took down the solar panels. He did everything he could, like Trump is doing, but not as effectively as Trump is doing. He did everything he thought of to roll back anything that was being done about climate change in 1980. And that's because less than 28% of the people who could have voted got him into office. And we really need to get the vote out. Everybody who thinks their vote doesn't matter needs to get out there.
Okay,
thank you for your call. And you are listening to More Talk Radio. This is Celeste. I'm here with Cecil. 503-231-8187 is our phone number. Join us. What were you about to say, Cecil?
No, I was just reflecting on Iris and her last statements about the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980, and in terms of the percentage of those who voted and the types of changes we can make. So for those who continue to poo-poo, and that's okay, the electoral process, elections have consequences, and we are still suffering through the results of Ronald Reagan's election in 1980. Do you recall that in 1980, there was in the Republican Party a candidate who was a progressive, John Anderson, and he was part of mainstream Republican from Illinois, I believe. But Ronald Reagan won the Republicans' nomination and started us down this long trend that we, this deep hole that we are slipping deeper and deeper into, and we just have to try to find our way out of it. But let's see if Robbie has some thoughts for us today. Good morning, Robbie. Thank you for your call.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I really liked what Iris had to say. It's really important to keep that dialogue with those people. And I'll be honest, it's actually, I'm a leftist, not a liberal. And a way that I can actually really break through to those right-wing conspiracy people who, you know, it's like just the fringe people, I can connect with them in my dislike of the liberal candidates. And I got to tell people this because it's all the time when you're talking to the right and you say something to the extent of like, oh, you know, Donald Trump and the immigrants, and then they're like, well, Obama did this. And do you know how gratifying it is for me to say, well, yeah, I didn't like Obama either. And then you watch their head explode because you're able to connect on this level by critiquing the left. And so that's just one concept that, with this communication, that they'll, when they try to start this argument, a lot of people fall to their emotions. We argue with one another, you know, our voices get elevated, and then we're not talking about the facts. And so it's important to have that, which is what I was going to initially bring up with the election and your questions about it, how we feel about the election. Honestly, I think the scarier thing about Donald Trump right now is the idea that all we have to do is vote him out. I feel that right now it's a trend for people to be interested in the news. I've been hyper aware of the news since Bush versus Gore in 2000. And I've watched this political machine, which I do disagree with Iris in one thing, when she was saying that the system's broken. The system is not broken. I don't know why we have to go over, why people don't recognize this yet, but the system is not broken. The system is fixed. The system is fixed and doing exactly as the people who fixed it intended it to do, which is basically shunt out our democracy. So when she also said that our votes matter, technically they don't on the Electoral College side, because our entire state's going to be awarding the Electoral College vote to those things. So on that front, it doesn't. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because I feel we need to get a little bit more educated knowledge on this field, because we're just going to fall to the same symptoms that got us here. In 1968, the Democratic Party did the same exact thing with the anti-war candidate that they did to Bernie Sanders. And we're going to keep falling victim to that unless we start calling it out and we start saying it by name, that Joe Biden, the Democratic National Party rigged the primary election, put in Joe Biden, who I'm definitely not supportive of. But if we want to feel better and vote for Joe Biden, my concern now is that we're going to lose all this momentum, all this attention, and we're just going to say, okay, great, Joe Biden's in. But meanwhile, I was an activist with Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, the first one, the Dakota Access Pipeline, all of which was under Joe Biden and Obama's administration. So my concern is that we keep this attention, this focused spotlight on the system, on the problem that gave us Donald Trump. Because what I see is we're shifting. It's called the ratchet effect. And basically the ratchet effect is we keep going right, which is why Bernie Sanders was considered a far left candidate, which is completely not true. A far left candidate is advocating for taking personal property and redistributing it. Bernie Sanders wanted to give people health care and, college tuition. That's now considered the far left, which really isn't. And that's because we've been shifted so far right because of candidates like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. That's just my opinion on it, though.
So you began your conversation by sharing how you can find common ground with those on the right and elevate the conversation so you could actually have a conversation and give a critical analysis, one that opens up by finding common ground. You can open up space where you can offer them a different analysis of the situation. I appreciate your comments about these are my words, not exactly yours, that the system isn't broken. It's working just as it was supposed to and intended to. And one question I have is for you is what if Biden is elected? What are the challenges for those on the left? What are the challenges that we have Are they different than the challenges we might have if Trump is reelected?
I feel that there's a surface level of what's happening, and then there's, like, for instance, everybody thinks Donald Trump as this egomaniac, crazy, you know, white supremacist, which, you know, I know he is, but what I see him most, what I see him mostly doing is playing a role. To answer your question, I feel if Joe Biden, I would do nothing different. This is all planned. In my view, in my weird conspiracy world view, this has been a plan. We've watched the executive branch get all this power through the past 30 or 40 years. The executive branch has been doing things under the Reagan administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the Obama administration. All these administrations were slowly granting more power. Dick Cheney did a really great, there's actually the movie Vice about Dick Cheney. It goes into it pretty well about how the executive branch stole so much of this power. But when you look at it like this view that I have, there's no difference between the left and the right. And what we're witnessing right now is the powers that be wanting the left and right to clash exactly how we are. And then we're going to get in Joe Biden, and then business as usual. Joe Biden basically said, you know, it'll be as if nothing's changed. That's a problem for me, because I've been working to change this problem since before Donald Trump. So that when you ask, you know, what are these problems? The same exact problems. The only difference that Obama did when he separated 3 million families was they didn't call it the family separation thing, right? You know, they did it. I was in the state of Arizona, and the ICE and Customs Border Patrol was hugely doing the same exact thing. It's just under a different disguise. You know, now they're out in the open about it. So I feel it's the same exact problems. You know, I mean, he didn't want to offer Medicare for all. Fracking is still going to be going on. So I don't really know what, I mean, besides the fact that there's just basically a platform now for all these white supremacists to stand on, which is going back to the point about having that dialogue. Because when I do have this dialogue with people, and I can comment to Trump supporters, I can say, did you know Donald Trump was a Republican, was a Democrat up until the year 2009, supported abortion and supported universal health care? And Donald Trump supporters are like, they're like, well, what, a person can't change? And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that person changed completely in 5 to 6 years. How is that? How can anybody change their complete views and do a 180? It doesn't make sense to me. And this is where I start to go, you know, I'll keep going down the hole. I appreciate the airtime that you've given me here, and I'll end it with this here. But Bill Clinton literally called up Donald Trump and told him to run in 2015. And a Washington Post article, 4 associates with Donald Trump and 3 with Bill Clinton, confirmed that Bill Clinton called Donald Trump and said he was striking a chord with frustrated conservatives and that he should play a larger part in the Republican Party. About 2 weeks later, he announced he was running. So, and here's the thing, Republicans and Democrats, when I bring this up to them, they both say that, oh, well, that's just because Hillary Clinton thought that, you know, Donald Trump would be an easy candidate to beat. I don't quite see that. I what I'm seeing here is this left and right machine playing us, getting us to get all riled up on choose our sides like it's a political football team or sports team, I should say. And then we're going to forget about what they're actually doing. And so I find it really difficult for me to take voting serious when you're hyper aware of all these little facts. So, you know, ultimately, like, yeah, I'm not discouraging people to vote. I think that, you know, vote, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be enough.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Robbie, for sharing your thoughts and continue to do your work to educate and to be in dialogue with those who you disagree with. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. I am Cecil, and you are...
And you are calling in at
503-231-8187 here on More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland. So who's next? Is it you?
No one.
Why haven't you called me? Did you not hear me say the phone number? Oh, you need me.
What's the phone number?
Oh, I'll repeat it for you. Sure. It's 503-231-8187. You should have that on speed dial if you listen to cable. Yeah. Put it on speed dial.
Okay. Well, give us a call and give your thoughts. Maybe you want to comment on what Robbie had to say, whether or not it makes a difference, whether or not you vote, whether the Dems and Republicans are the same. I don't want to speak for her, but I think a multi-talented operator.
Operator, Sonia, what?
Sonia said that the same people who say that Dems. Well, Sonia, why don't you read your statement? Are you there,
right,
Sonia?
I was giving a little thing on Robbie talking about how Trump was a pro-abortion, pro-Medicare for all Democrat, and then switched entirely. And how the same people who defend that will criticize Democrats who make a far smaller shift, you know, in light of new information. It's like, oh, they have no principles. They didn't stand by anything. They're just flip-flopping. Because none of the support for Trump is about facts. It's about, he hurts people I hate, I don't like, so anything he does is okay. I want him to be there.
Right.
You know,
I saw
that's
it.
Simplification, but yeah. And not simplification on your part, Sonia, but a simplification on their part. I guess a reductionist would be a better way to describe that person who has those kind of thoughts. It, you know, because it's a much more complex issue than that. First, just on the whole concept of changing your mind, I thought that was a part of growth. You know, now with regard to the negative aspects of changing your mind and being flip-flopping, yeah, I can see where they have a point. But when they don't look at the fact that people form these strategies, that's a whole different dynamic. I don't know. What do you think our next caller would say?
Well, let's see what Sharon has to say. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
Sharon?
Hello? Uh-oh.
Okay, this is a little weird to say. I'm going to see if I can get Sharon back on. Y'all talk amongst yourselves.
Okay. So one of the things that, for me at least, in terms of talking about the president, I think that many, I don't know many, but my observation is that certainly he's not a person of principles. The principles, but for he sees things as more transactional. So
if he
can get something, then that's where he will stand. And that's why I think I read a good article in The Atlantic calling out white evangelicals for their support of President, I almost said Bush, President Trump. And their failure, and what this article said in part was they made an agreement that, you know, they might not agree with who he is, his personality, or how he conducts his personal lives, but he, you know, he's very transactional, and that he gives us what we want, and therefore we will support him. And if that's the type of what you think politics is all about, then you may not, that's one view of politics that I don't think I agree with. But I think Sharon's back online, so let's see what Sharon has to say. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning. Okay.
You're a little bit muted for me, but if you can hear me.
Yes,
we can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. Is it time for me to give my comments, or am I in a holding? Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. You know, the question about what to do after the election is a big one and one to think about. I think probably like a lot of people, I'm just thinking we just have to get Trump out and like we'll look at assess the damage after that. But also like a lot of people, you know, I can resonate with the comments that people have made that the system itself is so broken. And we know that neither person coming in is going to be giving us the full change that we need. But I also want to put in the comment that even though it's confusing and even though the Democrats are doing all sorts of things that are questionable also, I think it's important to remember that in terms of voting, we do know what's right, even if it's not one completely clear choice that we're all behind. Just because it's confusing shouldn't stop us from still making the choice, you know, whatever choice it is that we think is right. I think sometimes the confusion is just a way of getting people to not do anything. So I want to encourage people not to let themselves get trapped in the confusing pictures. Even when nothing is perfect, there is still a good choice, a better choice. And then, so for afterwards, I'm not completely sure. I mean, to a certain degree, I can't even begin to look at the destruction that I think has happened under Trump to our whole system. Although the system is broken, it's like even more distorted now. So I can relate to a lot of things about not knowing, you know, not having faith that Biden's going to lead us to anything different. But I do think that it gives us a chance and to keep doing what we're fighting for. Like, once, I'm hoping, Biden wins or Trump doesn't win, we keep on with the momentum of things that have come up and just keep fighting for it. It's not like the election's going to change anything, but it's going to be the place from which to move forward. So that's what I say. Keep all the things that we're fighting for, in terms of equality, economic, racial, all around, and the environment, just use this as a place to move forward.
Thank you so much, Sharon. You should not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Celeste, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying thank you, kind of like you were. And, you know, the bottom line is, as Sharon said, you know, this work has got to be ongoing. We can't look at our goal as being the ousting of one administration, you know, over another, and that's it, you know, terminus, mission completed. No, it's not. This has to be an ongoing thing, if for no other reason than human nature and the fact that what each of us think is equity or is fair is not necessarily the same thing. You know, if we talk to a lot of our colleagues who are on the right, and by colleagues I mean other human beings, they will think that equity means that you keep the current status, you know, that white supremacy is the issue, ignoring the fact that our culture would be much stronger if we fully accepted and integrated everybody. But that's not the issue, you know. So we have to keep working because we all have different ideas of what equity is, and we need to keep a dialogue going and keep the, what is that said, eyes on the prize?
Oh, yes.
The eyes on the prize means that we have equity and equality for all. You know, everybody is welcome. Everybody feels welcome. Everybody is equally assured of using their gifts and talents.
So as we come to a close and take those aphorisms to our heart, continue to do that which is right. If you are a voter, go to the voting place or fill out your ballot, not only for the executive office of the United States, but also for your city councilor, your state representative, your county commissioner, your dog catcher, the school board member, your party precinct person. They're all important.
And please support your community radio, KBOO Portland. We are in the midst of our membership drive. We want to see 250 new members. Are you a member? You are. Well, what about your family and friends? Get them to join too. You can do so by going to kboo.fm/donate and become a member of support non-corporate, commercial free, community-based radio. All done for you. We'll catch you next week.
Dearest of all, darling, I know we've got to part. Baby.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Community Radio.